You're listening to the 503 Report with Tim Reinerson and Andrew Wellborn, where America's voice is heard. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
Independence Day. Man, what a great day that is. With me as always, on my favorite day of the week, over here on my right, my good friend Andrew Wellborn. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, man. You know, there's so many things we can talk about this weekend. Obviously, I think just about every radio broadcast, every news broadcast, everybody in the media is going to be talking about the greatness, you know, the history. All of a sudden, everybody becomes, you know, great historians on the 4th of July weekend when it comes to, you know, what the Declaration of Independence means versus the Constitution versus another document. We forget about the Articles of Confederation. You know, what happened during our history? You know, it's interesting because of the Declarations of Independence list of grievances that we had against a king that we call the tyrant, which we look at historically wasn't really quite the tyrant as we portrayed him in that document and the things that we believe in. And, you know, as we go forward, you know, thinking about this country, you know, the accomplishments of this country is something that I believe this nation is forgetting how great we have accomplished, especially when we look at the list of grievances in the Declaration of Independence. It's almost like we have self-imposed those same types of grievances on we the people in our established federal government. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And I just want to take a minute. We know this is going to be on the rebroadcast, but folks, have yourself a happy 4th of July weekend. Be careful, be safe, and just really, really, really go out there and celebrate this great nation's birthday. Well, the evolution is the key, and that's where we get in trouble, I think, as Republicans, libertarians, and leftists, and communists, and liberals, and PCSers out there. Look, the bottom line is this nation has achieved. This nation continues to go forward. And, you know, the problem and some of the concern I do have right now is I don't see after a certain time point, you know, Tim, we were just talking about this off the air, when I look at my points of history, I've got lists and lists to pick from. But, you know, we get to a point where we're not starting to achieve as much as we have achieved first, you know, 200 years of this great nation. But ultimately, when it comes down to this, we forget historically what makes the framers or the fathers of the Revolutionary War so great is that they were few in numbers. They were a few number of great men that saw that this needed to happen. They did not have the full support of the nation. We forget about that historically. You know, and some of our greatest defeats was because we did not have, I believe, historically, the full support of the nation as we were engaging with the Royal Crown of Britain. And so as a result, the struggles that we see in history under George Washington, they were there, obviously. There was huge struggles. Most of the people did not like what was happening. You had the Tories. There's a historical reference there, the individuals that were still loyal to the Crown of England. But yet, at the same time, when it was all said and done, those Tories and the individuals that were spared, you know, they quickly assimilated back into what we now know as the original states, the original colonies, now the original first states of this great nation.
You know, it was a struggle. It was very difficult, you know, looking back and studying and getting ready. Mm-hmm. No, there was a divide there. Maybe not quite like on the Civil War, 100 years almost later, but there was a divide. People were having a difficult time.
Oh, yeah, it was not unanimous support like we try to portray it. And some of our libertarians talk about this on campaign trails. You know, it's starting to frustrate me more and more, you know, these days, because you start to hear candidates, you start to hear broadcasters, all of a sudden, like I said earlier, become all of a sudden historians when it comes to this nation's history. And to me, they sound like exactly what they are, cliff note readers. You know, they're cramming their head. Most of the history that I talk about on the show just really is, I recollect it. It's not college level history. Most of the history that I refer to, sometimes I have to go back and just refresh. But the bottom line is this is stuff that I was taught in high school and junior high coming up as a young man in the great state of Texas. Now, look, hey, we forget some very, very important principles of our history. We forget that once upon a time, before the Constitution that was presented by Madison, there was the Articles of Confederation, and there was the great debate, you know, individual states versus a federal government, federalists versus anti-federalism. You know, the battle is still occurring today politically. And so when Madison went to the states for ratification of the Great Constitution, that's why he brought the 12 amendments, the first 12 amendments that were later ratified as, like you referred to earlier, the first 10 Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. And so the most important one to the states back then was the 10th Amendment, the states' rights. They did not want the intrusion of the federal government. Now, look, what I'm doing is I'm setting up on a few things I want to talk about on the bottom part of the show, but it comes out of history. Some of the things that are happening down in the southern states today are straight out of the history books. And in some cases, I'm going to be maybe controversial, but I'm going to refer to some other instances that are happening, even in today's world, that are similar to what happened in the southern states of America, which resulted ultimately in the Civil War of this country.
In the United States, 239 years ago, I believe, when the President and the Congress got together and George Washington was unanimously selected or elected as the President of the United States, then we went on to our former government after that. And what a challenging time they had. Those men back in those days, it was truly, truly remarkable what they did during those course of those years they were put together the Declaration of Independence for these great United States.
Well, I have to tell you, history is the name of the game, and we have to know our history in order to move forward as a nation. And so speaking of that, folks, that's why I love doing this section. All right, California, it's time for something that we may or we may not know. Today's date, July 3rd, going into the 4th of July weekend, 1754, okay, not 1776, 1754, George Washington surrenders to the French at Fort Necessity, okay, that was during the Seven-Year War. We're not used to hearing George Washington surrender, but he had huge military defeats early on in his career. And then, of course, in 1848, very important, 1848, the slaves were freed in the Danish West Indies, now known as the U.S. Virgin Islands, setting up a trend. And then, of course, 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, the largest battle ever fought on the American continent, ends in a major victory for the Federalist Union Yankees. Oh, happy 4th of July weekend all across America. I gotta tell you, be safe, America. Be careful out there. Enjoy, recognize, and understand what you are celebrating. Take a moment to thank all the men and women who died in the name of this freedom throughout our nation's history. Pop that adult beverage, but be careful, be safe, and just recognize exactly why you are able. So you know what? Lift one up. Give a salute to all the people who have come before you to allow you to be out on that lake this weekend, to watch those fireworks shows this weekend, and do whatever it is, grilling hot dogs and hamburgers on those grills. Okay, folks, hello, hello, Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And Tim, we are where America's voice is heard.
It is our independence. It is a great time in our nation. I firmly believe that we are and will continue to be. This day, and it's all over the Middle East and everywhere in Asia, trying to get that independence that we fought so hard for. And my wish to them and my gain that independence from whatever it is that they want, that they have the men and the women needed to form that perfect union like these United States.
Well, they have to want it, first of all. Exactly. So throughout the world, if you want independence and democracy, then you need to get out there and fight, for it. One of the things that I find very, very disturbing is when I see all the able-bodied men and women who are fleeing from ISIS, fleeing from the Middle East this weekend, rather than bearing arms, taking up arms and defending their homeland. They're fleeing to Europe rather than actually fight a very small group of individuals. And so with that, look, historically, we brought up the quote from Thomas Jefferson several weeks back, talking about the importance of institutions changing as time goes along. In other words, how the institutions of this nation, the Supreme Court, arguably is in a huge debate right now amongst libertarians and amongst Americans. And I want to, first of all, thank a lot of individuals who approached us over the week and listened to one of the things that we talked about with Justice John Roberts and the Supreme Court. Look, we confuse oftentimes the Federalist Papers versus the Declaration of Independence versus the Constitution of the United States. And we confused the three, and we tried to take a piece here, a piece there to say this is what the intent was, which is what the justices do. But look, the Supreme Court job sometime is to do exactly what we praise John Roberts for doing, you know, to step in and to make a change when it's necessary. Oftentimes throughout our history, we see the Supreme Court, you know, the Dred Scott decision, Brown versus the Board of Education, you know, establishing and reaching out individual liberties underneath the Constitution and giving individuals those liberties under the Constitution. And sometimes these laws are overturned or sometimes they are reinvented by the court in order to establish individual equality. For instance, the latest one, obviously, the gay marriage here in the United States. But most importantly, you know, I know people were confused when I praised Justice John Roberts for writing his majority, taking the position with his majority position on the Obamacare decision. But, you know, for the first time, I think, historically, we're seeing what the court is supposed to do. You know, they're not overturning a bad law. They're not overturning a discriminative law. What they're doing is they are establishing the protection of the process. And you hear me talk about the process all the time, Tim. The process of this country, the republic, is important. And so when you're upholding the legislative process and then giving it back to the people to make that decision based on whom we elect to represent us in the United States Congress, for the first time, I think we're seeing the Supreme Court do what it's supposed to do, which is uphold the process of democracy within this republic, regardless of the law.
That is right. And regardless of, let's say, who appointed you, John Roberts, appointed by President Bush, you would think that he would have more conservative, he has values, or his rulings would be that way, but he has, like you said, ruled on what is right, what is the law. He has gone both ways, and that is what you want.
I think so. I mean, you know, it's not the Supreme Court's job to just overrule the process in a situation that is non, let's say, oppressive, discriminative, you know, and things like that with some of the other cases that they've overruled. And but at the same time, we understand the dangers of evolution. Privacy became the foundation for abortion. And so, you know, these wordings, these precedents, you know, I think it was more important that the Supreme Court establishes a new precedence, which I think historically we're going to look back on it. The new precedence that's been set by the Supreme Court in the United States is that it's not the role of the Congress to overturn non-equal protections laws, to just overturn legislation because of the will of the people at this point in time don't like it, or maybe members of the court don't like it. It's up to the people to elect and change that process, not the court. And I think that is so important. And I think that is something very positive that we must look at across this country.
And I think that the people, and we hope, Andrew, within the next states, and all throughout every state in these United States, look into that and be informed with that. And that is the process that we have as we, the people, to put those folks, we hope to get those values in place out there, so we don't have to have the Supreme Court delving their hand in everything. Because this last week, the last 2 weeks, what a week it was from that. I think they had three major rulings. I mean, you just don't see that with the Supreme Court. They take their time, they take months, sometimes they like that don't really happen. And I think maybe the people are, you know, the people who want those, of course, are very ecstatic by them. But that is the process we have. But we don't want to see the Supreme Court in the light all the time. They're there for a purpose to make those rulings. Okay, now we don't need to see them. But why don't we have things? Or people vote for something, Andrew, and then it has to go to the court afterwards. I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
All the time. Why that has to happen? Because the people voted, this is what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, And then it's going to go, well, somebody's going to take it to court, and it's going to get tossed out. Yeah. But that's not what the people wanted.
Well, you know, we've talked about this a few times, Tim, on past shows, and we discussed this quite a bit with my good friend Christopher Bennett. You know, look, the process, when you read it, you know, I mean, at what point is the Supreme Court there to interpret the law? You know, should they interpret the law immediately when it's passed by the Congress? I mean, why should a law be passed and imposed upon the people without an interpretation? And then, you know, it gets implemented as law of the land, because not just everybody can afford to pay for the fight up to the Supreme Court. So when you look at the Supreme Court in its totality, when you look at how the branches of government are set up, I'm surprised that there's not an argument that any piece of legislation under the legislative power of the United States Constitution actually goes before the court prior to being implemented onto all the people across this country. And I think that it would save a lot of the problems that we face as a nation, some of the stupid laws that we have on this in this country on our books, I think is a direct result of, you know, the Supreme Court actually not hearing the cases. Plus, it would slow down some of the stupid legislation that comes out of that United States Congress. Okay, we do have a call on the line. Welcome to 503 Report. Thanks for joining the conversation. What is on your mind today?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Violet!
Did you guys ever look to see what the gold fringe on the flag means?
You know what? I can't wait for you to tell us. Can you tell
us? I've told you 10,000 times.
Okay. Tell us one more time on the 4th of July.
It means martial law.
Yes.
You have no rights. That's what it means. And Lincoln put that law in when they killed him.
Yeah, you know, old Lincoln, you know, actually part of the bottom part of the show, I kind of get into old Lincoln a little bit, you know, but ultimately it comes down to this, you know, it's the process of the Constitution. I just think at some point we need to evolve it to where, you know, the Supreme Court needs to look at the laws passed by the Congress prior to it being imposed upon the people. And, you know, the ultimate, I guess, I'd be surprised if libertarians across this country would disagree with that, Tim.
I think that they should not disagree with that, and I think that is a great thing. I think we've talked about that for the 4 years. Why do people get out there and they vote, and they see that things get out there? We all voted to pass 70% to 30%, and yet somebody says, well, I don't like it because they lost. And it got put into court, and now they're going to throw it back out again, and they're going to change it just a little bit. But that's not what the people want. And I can understand the frustration that people do have on like that. And there should be a process. Something should happen, because Lord knows most of those people in the government, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, a lot of those are lawyers.
Well, look, I mean, the Congress should actually implement a law to mandate that. But, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody in Congress, Tim, will... I don't think anybody is going to actually write a law like that, because it would just really, really restrict the power that those individuals have over us from Washington, D.C.
Veterans Association Sierra Nevada Healthcare System Veterans Transportation Network needs volunteer van drivers. Help get our veterans to their medical appointments. You don't need a special license, and you need not be a veteran to drive. Call the van coordinator, Aubrey Hawkins, 530-258-0319. That's 258-0319. This message, a community service of your favorite radio station.
The views and opinions expressed on the 503 Report do not necessarily represent those of staff or management of KSUE, and are brought to you solely by Andrew Wellborn and the 503 Network.
Okay, California, we got some more stuff that you should know, or maybe we don't know, but the year is 1898. The United States Navy, the great Navy of the United States, defeats the Spanish fleet in Santiago Harbor, Cuba. Wonderful, wonderful. 1913, the Confederate veterans at the Great Reunion of 1913, they reenact Pickett's charge at Gettysburg. And guess what happened when they reached the top? They're met by the outstretched hands and friendship from Union survivors. And, of course, 1916. This is kind of important, what's happened a little bit on our eastern seaboard. It was the first of three fatal shark attacks occurred near the New Jersey shore. Four people died. So the sharks that are up and down the Carolinas, you know, it's been going on for a long time, folks. So you don't want to get bitten by a shark, stay out of the water. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, we are aware America's voice is heard. And, Tim, this July 4th weekend, I'm going to switch it up, man. I want to talk about this Confederate flag debate that's going on in the South. I'm getting frustrated listening to some of these individuals, especially these Yankee reporters up there in the North, coming out of the major networks, trying to talk about Southern history, Southern pride, Southern heritage, and the positions that they have. And I just want to start right now, When it comes to the Confederate battle flag, we confuse the flag. You know, it's not the stars and bars. Okay, it's just the battle flag. You know, we forget that the stars and bars was the original flag of the Confederacy, and it was red, white, and red, and then the blue part of the corner had the 13 round stars of the 13 states of the Confederacy that successfully seceded from the Union. And so what happened historically, the way that flag came about, Tim, was it was the Battle of the First Bull Run, and it was difficult for the Army of the Virginians to distinguish between their military positions and the Union Federalists because of the similarity of the two flags. And so as a result, the battle flag was born. That's what we see today that represents a lot of the South. Now look, let's talk about Southern heritage. Let's talk about deep-rooted institutional, historical upbringings when it comes to the people of the South. See, we forget, or we don't teach anymore, that what occurred once the South surrendered. We forget that the punishment in the name of Reconstruction that occurred onto the South. You know, we're quick to condemn individuals like Nathan Bedford Forrest, but we forget about William Sherman. You know, that is the history. We like to condemn the Bedford Forrests, and we want to focus on the racism of the South versus the historical fact. Now, we mentioned the Articles of Confederation earlier when it came to the original documents. Think about this. That was 1787. You know, less than a generation later, 1860, we had the states' rights issue occur. You know, I was pretty pleased because I read on the history part of the citizenship exam for a U.S. citizen, it asked the question, what was the cause of the Civil War in the United States? And it lists, number one, economics, number two, states' rights, number three, slavery, number four, all the above. And the correct answer is all the above, but what really impressed me is that the historical listings are correct. What happened to the South was economics. The North placed the tariffs on them, and then what happened next, they basically declared slavery illegal. Now it became a states' right issue, which was the 10th Amendment, okay, to protect, so that they moved out of the Articles of Confederation into the Constitution, and of course, number three, slavery. The right answer was D, all of the above. And so when it comes to the South, we forget. We forget that, William Sherman came through the South and basically destroyed the South. Have you heard the term bummer?
Yes.
Yeah, bummer. I mean, mm-hmm. We don't understand what a bummer is,
It's a downer.
It's a downer. But in the case, a bummer was a Union soldier that basically raided the houses of the Southerns. So the South was punished heavily. And so the history of the South, most Southerners are raised understanding, once upon a time, there was a glory in the South. You tour any major city in the South, you go into the old historical regions, you just see a beautiful time of economic prosperity. And, people were very successful in that Southern, culture.
Was it because, are they going to say, well, it's because of what they had? They had people working for them under slavery that were not free, that did not have any rights?
Well, the Northerns, they benefited because of the textiles and all the products, sure, and agriculture that went up to the North at very, very inexpensive rates. But ultimately, you know, look, we forget that in the South, the abolition movement was occurring. We forget about John Brown and his abolition movement with Harper's Ferry, you know, when it came to actually trying to raise an army of slaves, you know, to basically free, you know, look. Historically, if you look at what was happening, it was just a matter of time, I believe, that even in the South, you know, the slavery was going to be abolished. We didn't have to force the war, I don't believe. I don't believe Lincoln had to force the issue with this. Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of this in history. We've seen, because of the forcing of the issue, we don't do it as much in this nation. We try to, through attrition and through generation, change what the course is. But ultimately, when it came down, man, you know, the carpetbaggers came down, they stole the property, they stole all the businesses, they stole everything, you know. And then when they stole the plantations, you know, they employed the workforce with Union veteran soldiers. And so it was very difficult for a Confederate white man to get anything or to be able to buy anything. And so you had families of generation now, white generations, having their plantations, their land owned by their family for generations, just taken from them. We don't teach this part in our history. And so, yes, that rebel flag that we talk about, Johnny Reb's a rebel yelling battlefield glorious flag. Yes, it does represent glory in battle. You know, we were whooping up on the Yanks, man, until the Yankees finally did two things. They found General Sherman to go in and scorch earth everything, destroy everything, pillage everything. Then, of course, you know, the ports fell. And we learned from a Revolutionary War by cutting off the ports.
Oh, boy.
You know,
supply.
With England, absolutely, which ultimately ended in the rebel army not being resupplied. But you know what? The Yanks couldn't beat us. It took Lincoln four generals to be able to beat us. So that flag represents glorious battle. And for everybody to kind of associate that as racism, the problem I have is this: we should condemn organizations of racism and hate from displaying that flag. Now, when it comes to the flag here, real quick, I mean, as far as it flying on public property, look, there's only two flags, I believe, in this country need to fly over any public property. You know, that's the United States flag and the flag of the state that the government property is on. I don't want to see a Mexican national flag. I don't want to see a Canadian flag. I don't want to see any other in the name of, you know, honor and heritage of whatever. Look, those flags are government buildings of the state and of the country. So the flag issue for me is this. This is what happened. You know, when we talk about Bedford Forrest and the KKK and what he did, what most people don't realize is that the Ku Klux Klan was formed after the Civil War as a political organization. You can look this up, folks, and you're going to disagree with me. Bedford Forrest and those guys were trying to convince the black freed immigrants, I'm sorry, refugees or slaves, as they refer to in history, you know, to vote back in the South. And then when that, against the Republicans, against the Lincolns. And so white Southern men at that point in time had nowhere else to go, okay, for the most part. White Southern men actually went into the Democratic Party, as we like to refer to today. It was white Southern Democrats under this battle flag that has oppressed. You know, they get it so wrong. I listen to the big boys who tried to, you know, try to point that out in history. Well, there was a reason why. General Sherman, let's get back to him, okay? So in 1865, at the conclusion of the war, there were 40,000 freed slaves, okay? Guess what he did? We forget. He put them on stolen white Southerner land. That's where he placed the free slaves. That's where the 40 acres and the mule came from that we hear in the South. That resentment was huge. And then on top of that, white Confederate fighters, people who didn't own slaves, didn't even go onto the battlefield to fight for the slaves. They were fighting for their freedom from the oppression of the North, were now being punished. They couldn't get to work. The carpetbaggers stole all the businesses and employed the North. In fact, it was so ridiculous that 52 of the 60 congressmen from the South representing back into the Union were former Union veteran Army officials. And so, you know, the white Southern man was oppressed so much. They had their property stolen. We paid the price. You know, the Southern men, the slavery owners paid the price. Reparations, good Lord, you want to talk about reparations. Reparations need to go to the generations of the individuals who lost their businesses and prosperity and land from the South. Now, I can say this, I can speak on this, coming from the South, coming from the great state of Texas. This is the history that we're taught. Now, in no shape, form, or fashion should racism exist. Should you ever commit a crime against any individual because of any reason associated with their, obviously, the ethnic, their sex, and so forth. But that battle flag, okay, that battle flag represents glorious victory. And I got to tell you, resistance is what that flag represents. So in 1965, you know, when the Civil Rights Act occurred, you look, that's only 100 years after the Civil War. That resistance is what that flag represented, not necessarily racism. But let's take a look at how racism happened. When you take 40,000 individuals and you place them on land stolen from the individuals from the South.
What do you think you're going to get?
Absolutely. And in the name of Reconstruction.
Correct.
And punishment, you know, as a result of John Wilkes Booth actually killing Lincoln, because I don't think Lincoln would have allowed a lot of the things that happened after his death. But when you do that, I mean, aren't we seeing that in today's, dare I say, modern Israel and Palestine? What happens when you displace people within areas and then you can't get work and then you can't because you're being punished by the new Yankee business owners who have stolen all the businesses and properties? What happens? Isn't that not a Nazi Germany scenario that kicks off a little bit? I hate, this is why you can't get a job because the Jews, this is why you can't be successful because of the punishment of the Treaty of Versailles. So now the Reconstruction, Treaty of Versailles, two points of history that have collided that maybe we could have learned from. But the bottom line is that this, and so the white Democrat males and generations. So you have generations down there that probably still go by pieces of property, beautiful pieces of property, and they look at it and say, yeah, once upon a time, your great-great-grandparents owned that property, but it was stolen. You know, that creates the problem. It's no different sometimes. You know, that resentment is there a little bit. But the people of the South, let me tell you something. People of the South are great at hospitality, forgiveness. I mean, obviously what happened after the church shooting over the last 2 weeks shows, you know, how the people are in the South. But, you know, that flag represents resistance. And it's that resistance that is the heritage. And the heritage creates that Southern pride.
Why is that not portrayed in the media? Is it because it is so easy to just say it's because of hate, because of the Civil War, and because of the slaves? That plays out much easier than 7 minutes to explain exactly what that means.
Well, look, I mean, this is basic history that I was taught as a young man coming up through the Texas high schools, the Southern. Look, you're taught to be a Texan first, but really, I mean, to the victors goes the spoils of war and the writing of the history. But, you know, I mean, so, you know, when you look at a recent poll that came out that, you know, 50-something% of Americans, you know, almost 60% agree that the flag represents pride, not racism. That's huge. And that's a wonderful percentage. And then, of course, when it breaks out amongst the blacks, 70% think it represents racism. 20%, you know, understands. I guarantee probably most of the polling in the South comes that way a little bit. But look, I mean, the bottom line is this: Adolf Hitler took a very, very, very a symbol of fortune, good luck, you know, from an ancient city, and then he turned it into something nasty. Okay, so when I see the Confederate battle flag used by, you know, white supremacist groups and things like that, that's what needs to be banned. Okay, and people in the South need to condemn the individuals who try to portray that flag as a symbol of hate when it really is 100% a symbol of glorious battle, resistance, heritage, and pride.
50 years since the 1965 from when that happened. So hopefully within the next few years, we can get rid of that hate, that gut-wrenching vile what they are.
I think collectively it's gone. I think collectively it doesn't. You're going to have the individuals, you know, they're going to pick up a piece of history in there and point out the things that we just said, some of the things that are going to be justification and reason for the South to rise again. But let me tell you something, you know, the South is not going to rise again, folks. And as much as I love the South and I love the state of Texas, you know, it is a federalist government, and God bless America for that, buddy.
All right. What do we have from our favorite book today?
Well, before I get that, I want to make one note. You know what? It was interesting because the final battle of this Civil War, guess where it happened? Palmito Ranch on the banks of the Rio Grande east of Brownsville, Texas. So the last fight ever occurred in my home state of Texas. Okay, folks. It comes from Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might. God bless you, America.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
We always want to thank those men and women who go to work every day, working the toughest beat in the state, performing their duties so that you, our listener, up and down the state of California and across this nation can be safe, especially during this 4th of July weekend.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, heard every Friday about 12:15 after the news on 1240 KSU, live on SierraDennyNews.com as well. America, happy birthday to you, 239 years. Not once did we have to talk about how America is hiding and is cowering for some terrorist act like the media portrays. No, we are aware of what's going on in the world, but that's not our main story. That's why it's last thing to be mentioned. Have a great weekend, America. We love you here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
Let me thank you for your time.